This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Bill Kristol has been one of the most ubiquitous conservative commentators of the past two decades. The magazine he founded and edited, The Weekly Standard, was often described as the neocon Bible. But as Trump ascended, Kristol found himself marginalized, then ostracized by the increasingly Trumpist GOP. After clashing with the magazine's owner, he left the Weekly Standard, which was shuttered 2 years later, and became editor-at-large of the center-right website The Bulwark. We wondered if, as a man of the right who soundly rejects the big lie, he had any advice about how to talk to those who espouse it. First, I asked where he sat on the political spectrum nowadays.
You know, I've been using for 2-3 years now Pete Buttigieg's line from the 2019-2020 presidential campaign. Buttigieg said he wanted to appeal to Democrats, progressives, moderates, and even Republicans. And then I think he hesitated and said, well, maybe future former Republicans, which is a good way of evading the question of exactly what I am right now. I haven't voted Republican in a few years because I think the party really is now not a reliably Democratic small d party, and it has tolerated and enabled a kind of authoritarianism, nativism, and other things that I just find unacceptable.
As a journalist who once maintained the same political affiliation, how do you approach a Republican politician who pushes the big lie?
I've met rather few Republican politicians, elected officials in Congress, let's say, who really believe the big lie, even the ones who sit and tolerate it, even some of the ones who actually do more than tolerate it, but promote it. So among elites, I think we have a cynical and opportunistic willingness to go along with something that Donald Trump is pushing, and those elites don't want to see the conservative movement or the Republican Party split between Trump and those who tell the truth.
If they normalize the big lie, then it doesn't matter what they feel in their hearts, does it?
It's not quite as bad, obviously, as cheering it on or encouraging it or inciting it. I mean, we have to have some distinctions, I suppose.
No, we don't.
Well, yeah, that's maybe we don't. No, you're not going to call out everyone on your side of the aisle politically if they say something a little foolish, a little exaggerated, a little demagogic. That's sort of one set of things. But that's if the movement on the whole is healthy, cares about the truth, is law-abiding, and so forth. If the movement as a whole now gets taken over, though, by an authoritarian and truth-denying personality, yes, I think one has much more of an obligation to actually speak up against it. And at that point, being quiet is just being complicit.
Right.
I think people blame Trump, which is true. People worry about the base and blame the base for believing all this dangerous nonsense. They let off too easily the elected officials who have enabled this to go to the extent it's gone, and especially for me, the conservative elites who themselves have come up with fancy rationalizations for this. So I have friends who are still conservatives, academics, journalists, opinion leaders, and so forth. They're swimming in a world of the Wall Street Journal editorial page and Nashua View. They don't quite believe the craziest stuff on Fox News, but they believe the complicated rationalizations in the Wall Street Journal, which, A, make you think, well, maybe there's something there. It's not quite as bad as, you know, as Trump says, but, you know, there were real problems, Bill, and the left is doing the same thing, and they would do it in a minute. And the elites have a lot to explain, in my view, for letting it get to the point they've gotten to.
Many journalists, including the new MSNBC host Mehdi Hasan, say that they simply won't give a platform to people who spread that misinformation, even if it means ignoring the views of, like, a quarter of the country. What do you think about that?
I'm really of two minds. I'm just uncertain. I've turned down invitations to be on TV with Trump big lie propagators and even some of the rationalizers, I would say. I just don't want to do it. I just feel like if there's not a common basis of truth and good faith that one is acting on, how can you even have a debate? I suspect if I had a TV show, I'd be, on the one hand, think it's X percent of the country, who knows, 50, 40, 30% of the country. People need to see what they think. They need to be confronted. And on the other hand, you could also say that having them on gives them too much credibility. So I think it's a tough moment for journalists, for the media, and for sort of mainstream institutions in general.
You said 30, 40% of the country. I mean, the entire Republican Party is less than 30% of the country. If 70% of them believe in the big lie and a much smaller percentage of independents and a minuscule percentage of Democrats, that doesn't get you to 40%.
Yeah, fair enough. On the other hand, 47% of the voters voted for Trump, and I don't know,
yeah,
there's a fair amount of evidence. So let's say, 30%, 25%, 30%. That means that in Republican primaries, it's often more than 50%, which means that the nominees you get cater to those people. And, mm-hmm. and again, I come back to this problem. If all the other Republicans who didn't believe the lie then said, well, I'm sorry, I can't vote for a Republican nominee who embraces the big lie, then it would be a manageable problem. Then you would sort of segregate the problem, you know what I mean, among a few members of Congress. But that's not the current situation. And this is where I come back to the responsibility of the more mainstream Republicans and the more mainstream conservative elites. They say their typical reaction is once a Republican nominee gets the nomination who did vote to overturn the election, that's a majority of House Republicans, remember. Well, you know, we still got to support him because he'll vote the right way on the issues we care about and he's not really going to overturn elections after all. And so that is why you have, it may only be 25% of the country, but it's a higher percentage of Republican members of Congress, probably. It's a higher percentage of conservative activists, certainly. And it can keep on growing, and that's what's most worrisome.
You've been a mainstay of the conservative press, often on the receiving end of liberal snark. You've seemed to shrug that off, but now it seems to have become a battle of liberal snark on one side and owning the libs on the other. Do you see any way out?
I think the way out is to win first and then to reconcile, I guess is the way I would put it. The big lie has to be defeated. Mm-hmm. Then I think taking a look at how social media work and what our regulations mm-hmm. are for this and that how we can have a healthier political process. But at the end of the day, this is now an urgent enough problem that the people who propagate the big lie have to be defeated, which is why it's not enough to say, well, I don't like Marjorie Taylor Greene, but, you know, Kevin McCarthy's not like Marjorie Taylor Greene. He has to tolerate her. She's part of the conference. No. That shows the level of accommodation we've now developed, the level of rationalization, and I think it's very dangerous.
Right. Between gerrymandering, the Electoral College, and so forth, the primary system, there'll be a time very soon when the Senate represents 30% of the actual American electorate. So winning is a tall order. How do you win? How do you persuade people? What technique do you or would you use to reach across the chasm in this, you should forgive the expression, national conversation?
Well, it is possible to win. I think the way to do it is the way Biden did it in 2020, which is you got to get some chunk of those Republicans who know better and convince them that they can't tolerate electing a big lie proponent, even if they like that big lie proponent's tax policy or views on abortion or whatever, better than the Democrat in a primary. And that's hard work, and it's pretty, you know, retail work. There's no silver bullet for that. We need to persuade people in Florida and Texas to do better than Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott. I mean, they can be Republicans. They're not going to have the same views as people in Massachusetts and New York. But we need to figure out ways to try to bring some of those people over.
Have you ever changed anyone's mind?
I don't talk to average voters much, so I always am therefore very hesitant to...
Anybody who you disagree with on the matter of the big lie?
It's not the right way to ask the question, I would say. I mean...
All right.
I mean,
go ahead.
The question is, how many people who were on the Republican side in 2015 are now vehement in denouncing the big lie? I would say among intellectual types, journalist types, it's a pretty high number, actually. An awful lot of people who were at the Weekly Standard, some who were at National Review, some who were at the Wall Street Journal, you know, have been pretty forthright in saying this is unacceptable. So I'll answer your question a different way, because I think it is a good question. But which is why attempts to persuade have been relatively unsuccessful often. I think one reason is this. A lot of us said, oh boy, you're going to pay a price for embracing this, you know, to Republican officials in 2017 or to conservative elites in 2018. You know, everything Trump touches dies. There was a huge amount, especially on the left, I got to say, of almost triumphalism about how embarrassed they were all going to end up, all these people who were associated with this movement. And you know what? They've done fine. They've done fine. Sarah Sanders lied from the White House podium, and she's going to be governor of Arkansas.
Our state needs a leader with the courage to do what's right, not what's politically correct or convenient. I took on the media, the radical left, and their cancel culture, and I won.
The people who paid a price are the people who stood up. You know, Liz Cheney is behind in Wyoming. Kevin McCarthy's not facing a difficult primary challenge.
Have you reached out to people who were once firmly across the aisle in the intellectual bubble in which you dwell? I feel like I'm reaching out of my bubble into yours.
No, absolutely. I spend all my time these days talking to liberals and Democrats and going to conferences for them and publishing some of them at the Bulwark. I think that's happened at the intellectual level. I don't think it's happened effectively at the popular level, but that partly is just a phenomenon of polarization, social media, and other things which are difficult to overcome.
What did you think about Steve Inskeep's interview with former President Trump last week? I don't know if you heard about it or listened to it. Do you think it should have been live? Should it have been done at all? What's your view?
I thought he hit upon my instinct. I haven't thought this through entirely, but my instinct is to say that he did a good job. I mean, he's the leader of the Republican Party. It's kind of important to hear from him, but not to hear from him in a way in which his lies are unchallenged. And I think the fact that Inskeep, in a sense, fact-checked it, and when NPR didn't put it up as quickly as they might, you know, you want to get it up as soon as you can, you know, breaking news. But they didn't treat it that way, and they put it up in a way that was responsible and sober and serious. They hit upon something that might be a good way of dealing with this kind of problem.
And the problem of all of us preaching to the converted?
Well, I'm preaching, you know, and making my arguments. I can't really control who listens to them, can I, that much? I mean, people say, well, you should go on Fox. I'm like, I don't want to go on Fox now. I just don't want to be on their air. And I've said no, therefore, to them. They don't really invite me anymore. But in the early Trump years, there was a little bit of that. Having said that, the organization I'm part of, Defending Democracy Together, we do buy airtime on Fox to advertise messages that are very much anti-big lie. Kevin McCarthy said this in January of a year ago. Why isn't he saying it today? The contradictions, the exposing what's going on, the madness on the right. Does it affect 5, 10, 15% of their viewers? Maybe. And I think it's worth us doing that. But it's a tough call, I think, honestly, for a lot of people. I've had this conversation with many friends. Should I debate this person at a university? Should I contribute to this journal? It's not the easiest thing to know what the right answer is.
There is no clear path.
I mean, the clear path is to contain the lie and the liars as much as possible and then roll them back and defeat them. So it's like defeating Soviet communism. You don't know exactly what issues might give you more of an opportunity than others. That's one thing I'm struck by. We don't know ahead of time which overreach by MAGA world, which part of the craziness might be just a step too far for 5%, 20% of voters in some state or in some congressional district. Are people going to be put off by the vulgarity, by the grift?
So far, not.
Not much. But Joe Biden did win in 2020.
Yeah, but the Wall Street Journal is making a great deal of effort and much of the press to ensure that that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, and we need to make sure it does happen again.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bill Kristol was the former chief of staff to Vice President Dan Quayle and the founder of the conservative magazine, The Weekly Standard. He's now editor at large for The Bulwark.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.